following podcast is brought to you by the Communications and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. This is DJ Velo. Welcome to Wandering the Seven, where each episode we dive into the real history, controversies, and cultural significance surrounding the seven wonders of the world. Hi there. Welcome to episode 5, being about our fifth wonder of the world, Petra. Now, Petra is a city located in the desert of Jordan and is a phenomenal thing to think about because it was a city that was able to house up to between 3,000 and 5,000 people and keep them all alive in a desert. Now, that brings up a whole lot of questions, specifically with how they were able to get water and as well as all the resources they would need to be able to provide for all those people. But with those questions, we'll definitely be answering many of them. Before that, we can get to any of that. The lost city of Petra was one that was hidden for many years. And it wasn't until 1812 where it was actually discovered by people who weren't already part of people there in the Jordan, well, near Syria, because they wanted to keep it a hidden thing. But yeah, it wasn't until 1812 where a Swiss pilgrim named Johann Ludwig Bertram, the last name might not be quite correct, but in 1812, he ended up going on a bit of a voyage to find this city here in the Jordan, because he had heard rumors of it. Now, in order to do this, he had basically disguised himself as someone who would be able to pass as a person that was a local there, so that he could find out more information about the surrounding area, as well as any way that he could possibly get there. Now, this also led to him having to learn the language, as well as other things to be able to hold this front. But he did eventually find it, again in 1812. And yeah, this discovery that he made and brought back to the people back at his home country basically shocked the world, more specifically Europe, because it was a grand thing. It's this big city of sandstone just basically etched into a bunch of mountains there. It's a crazy thing to see. It's heavily inspired by architecture of Greeks as well as some influence of Syrian architecture as well. But it's a great mix. In terms of the Greek side of architecture, there are these columns that you can see in the entrance of the city to Petra that are very reminiscent of these three types of columns, I believe, that are specific to the Greek architecture. I believe one of them is Corinthian, another might be Doric. I'm blanking on the exact phrasing here, but yes, I believe the one that's actually being used here for these columns is Corinthian. That being the style of them. But yeah, it's a phenomenal thing. Just seeing a area where any type of home could be made inside of the mountains, let alone a city. This entrance to the city is also in a very temple-like appearance, and it's usually referred to as the treasury. There are also some statues of mythical creatures along these columns, as well as an urn at the middle top of the entrance. But inside, there is three doors leading to three chambers with not much detail in between them. Anyways, that's just this one area of this whole city. There's a whole bunch of other things. There's even a big outdoor theater that could also house many people. Very similar to the one actually that we have at Dominican, the amphitheater. But yeah, it's just, it's almost a marvel. But yeah, it's just a very amazing, amazing place with just a whole bunch of things that are made out of sandstone. So, who made this city? Now, the people who were responsible for this would be the Nabataeans, who were a nomadic tribe, very known for their trading. They traded many things and were very successful in this. They were also very well known for their desert survival. But the way they actually made this city, at least what's speculated by many historians, is there are these sort of notches, these like square notches on the sides of specifically the treasury that are seen to potentially be what ended up holding up a scaffolding and what that scaffolding would be attached to for them to be able to climb up and carve all these different pieces of this temple as well as other features of the city. It's very similar to what we might see in a rock climbing gym where you could see all these pegs on the walls for people to actually be able to climb up. That would be a very similar thing to what you could see with these holes on the sides of the treasury. This may not quite be the case though, because these holes that are found on the sides of the treasury that would have potentially held up a scaffolding aren't found anywhere else in the city. So the way that all this was made is still quite a mystery for many people, as historians are still trying to figure it out. Wood, as well as you can imagine, would not be very easy to find in the desert for scaffolding. I know I keep mentioning the treasury, but that's because it's one of the more notable areas of the city of Petra, as it's the most referenced in pop culture today. If you have seen the Indiana Jones movie, The Last Crusade, it was shown in the ending scene for when Indiana Jones goes in to retrieve the final treasure of that movie. This can often lead to a common misconception as well, though, with these different areas of the city, as it can be perceived that it's just filled with a bunch of places where treasure would be found, while the reality is that most of these places are tombs. Specifically, the treasury is a tomb in itself. It has, I believe, Aramaic writing towards the top that would suggest this. There was also these human-sized niches on the inside that would be where corpses would have been for these graves, but there was grave diggers who would disregard any signs pointing towards them not touching anything inside. But obviously, since there's nothing in there anymore, these bodies were stolen, and there's that. Back to the Nabataeans. The reason that there's so much influence from other empires, like Greek empires or Roman ones, and the reason for them being so successful was through their trading, and that would be of frankincense and myrrh. Now, in order for them to be able to trade to all these places, they had to get very accustomed with anywhere that they would be able to find, well, any water, because there you have to go on a bunch of long voyages to be able to exchange these goods. So this led to them having a quite good mastery over attaining water in the desert. And they would usually travel through camel, which would make it easier for them to take these resources. The trade routes that they used were also from all the way from Saudi Arabia to the port at Gaza, which would then go towards Rome. And Petra was right in the middle of that whole trade route, making it very easy to have a successful area for all those people. Now, to answer the question of water, we will have to go to the area of the city called the Great Temple. Now, this area has certain holes or aqueducts that are all pointing towards it. Now, there's a whole bunch of these networks or canals under this Great Temple, almost like an ancient sewer system, as opposed to the modern day one that we have now. But where does that water come from? Well, locals that still live around Petra today use something called the Aya Musa, or I believe the Well of Moses. The reason it's called this is because there's a story where Moses strikes a rock and water then comes out of it. Now he does this out of rage. But that legend is all the way in Ayin Musa, which is quite a bit away from the city of Petra. So in order to get all that water from Ayin Musa to Petra, which is 5 miles away, there was actually these channels on the side of the path that leads from Petra to Ayin Musa that hold space for these pipes that they would have used to get that water there. Now, these pipes would be made out of ceramics, as that is possibly the only type of material that they'd even be able to make into pipes back then. But these pipes would have to be at a 4-degree angle, with the top of it coming from Ayin Musa and the bottom half going to Petra, so that the flow of water would go towards Petra, not with too much pressure, so that the segments of ceramics would cause any leaks, but also with not so little pressure that there would be barely any water coming through the pipes. So they found out that 4 degrees, that angle, would create just enough where that they would get a constant stream of water from Ayin Musa all the way down to Petra. Again, a whole 5-mile distance for this water to travel, and they were able to find a way. Also, back to, well, the theories of how the temples and, well, basically everything in the city was made. A lot of historians have come down to the most likely method being that they started from the top and worked their way down with a method in which they would put 3 poles across the height that they would want to step on and put maybe 2 or 3 planks on top of those poles to work on the top part that they were working on. And then as soon as they were finished with that, they would move those poles down one by one. And as they were going, they would work again on that top part, but because those holes are there and on top, they can erase it as they go, making it look like they basically used nothing to be able to build that high up, which would make a lot of sense. Also, at a certain point, they wouldn't actually even need these platforms because the amount of rubble that would be produced from their carving would eventually make a hill of rubble on the side of the wall that they could literally just walk up. Of course, they'd have to clear it afterwards, but that would be another way that they'd get up to the heights they need to carve these parts of their structures. However, since we're on the topic of water, because they chose to build it on the side of this mountain and, well, / canyon, it was very easy for there to be flash floods whenever it would even rain a tiny bit. Even now, with more recent events, I believe in the maybe late 1960s, there was a time where about maybe 26 French tourists died from a flash flood that happened there in Petra. But yeah, it just raises a whole bunch of questions, as well as maybe some inferences towards how the city fell. I believe in the 5th century is where the problem of flooding really, really began to take a toll on the population living there. Yet it wouldn't make sense for earlier people who lived here to not have had this problem. So historians have also found that there was a series of dams that were below a gorge, and that would be where they have had all the water being stored and would protect them from any flash flooding happening. So not only were they able to create a system of hydraulics and build a whole city inside of a mountain, but they were also able to build dams probably well before dams were even invented, or discovered, at least in terms of history. I don't know the history behind dams, but yeah, they were able to create dams, and that was how they fixed this problem beforehand. I would assume that, I guess, in the 5th century, that the dams just ended up getting whittled down slowly but surely, and with that, people just either wanted to just not have the problem anymore and leave, or they just were all wiped out. And yeah, those are the stories behind the dams. There were also 5 of these dams, and before them, they would have made these canals towards these even bigger holes for the water to be in, and basically acting as a deterrent for the water to go through before they could even reach the city of Petra. With this water, they were also able to create greenery. They had terraces that they built near the Great Temple, and right next to it would be this big square with a smaller square in the middle and canals right beside it, leading to this terrace and having soil samples that they most likely got from the other places that they visited while trading. And that's where they would end up planting all these different types of plants. And that's why there's some greenery still seen there today. The greenery also painted the picture for historians that the city of Petra used to be something of an oasis, with all the samples from these different places, and all the amount of water that they had. A lot of comparisons are made towards Las Vegas, where Las Vegas is seen with a whole bunch of water fountains and just a bunch of different parts from different places. I don't know if the miniature Eiffel Tower is also in Las Vegas, but there's just many like different things from different places in Las Vegas, and referencing to different things in Las Vegas. So yeah, that connection is made by many historians. Also, we are a little bit over time, but yeah, I do hope you guys, hope you enjoyed the episode. Today was slightly different than the episodes that have been before. I hope it wasn't too off-putting, but I look forward to talking to you guys again next episode, where we will have a guest to talk about our 6th wonder of the world. And yeah, look forward to seeing you again. And yeah, take care.